Takara charisma, great energy from Takara. Wait till you feel it. It's just, she's a digital marketer, but she's quite uncommon when it comes to it. She started a e-commerce site almost 20 years ago, and it kind of evolved into this. First question I asked her was a post that she had on Instagram talking about being the underdog, and when you're the underdog, how it's such a much better story when you do make it. We start off with that. We talk about trends. I'm always fascinated. You know, I deal with a lot of small to medium businesses, and many of these owners don't know the difference between marketing and sales. I start there. I say, what's the difference between traditional marketing and digital marketing, and then marketing and sales? I wonder what your answer would be. But great discussion there. We talk about personal brand and innovation. You know, a lot of the youth today, when you ask them what they want to be, they want to be an influencer, you know, and what does that take? It's a little scary if you ask me, but we talk a lot about that. And she's a big advocate for email marketing. You get so much bang for your buck. I talk about SMS marketing as well. It's a wonderful conversation about digital marketing, how it levels the playing field for everyone, no matter how big or small you are. I love talking about this. I love helping small and medium-sized businesses. They're the foundation of business throughout the globe. Really cool. Really, really cool talking to Takara. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, you know, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic. I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration.
Fantastic. Takara Charisma, so excited to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. Why does being the underdog give you such a great, better story when you make it, when you achieve?
I just posted on this on Instagram. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. But I think it's my last post. I'm not kidding. So I don't know if you saw that. But my quote was, being the underdog only means you're going to have a cooler story once you finally make it. And isn't that the truth, right? Like, everything in life is such a learning experience for growth. And it honestly comes down to your mindset. Are you going to see that quote unquote failure as a setback or a step up to your next big success in life, right? So the underdog is someone I'm always rooting for, whether it's the Super Bowl or whether, you know, it's my own children. It makes that success when you get to the top of that mountain all that much sweeter, right? So for that reason, you know, it's okay to be the underdog. You're going to have a super cool story once you finally make it.
Why digital marketing for you?
You know, I have actually been in that space for, gosh, now it's 17 years. So I went to school for business economics. I'm the daughter of two entrepreneurs. And I love business. So I opened up my own e-commerce store back in 2007. This is when Facebook had 20 million users. Mm. This is before Shopify existed. This is when drop shipping wasn't even a term till about 2010. So I was self-taught in a lot of ways. I ended up expanding the business to 15 different countries and doing really well. And I decided that I didn't really care for customer service and inventory and all of the issues that come with e-commerce, but I did know how to grow a business. I absolutely knew it. And that to me was so exciting and fun. So I decided to kind of transition from the actual e-commerce business owner to the marketing agency that helps e-commerce businesses grow. And since then, we've, you know, helped many businesses get to seven-figure, eight-figure plus results through a myriad of digital marketing kind of services like SEO and email marketing and paid ads and all the things that you need to really grow online. So for me, it's a huge passion. I just love figuring out the puzzle pieces to make them work together, to make a business grow, and then to have the owner experience everything they've kind of dreamt of, you know, once they put all of those pieces in place. So for me, it's very fulfilling.
What's the difference between digital marketing and traditional marketing?
Yeah, these days, I always say, you know what? I learned back with my e-commerce store when most website traffic was actually on desktop. It wasn't even mobile at that point. I think mobile was 5% of website traffic when I started. And I learned the power of making money while I slept. And so when people would ask me, why don't you go pound pavement door to door? I was selling children's clothing. Why don't you just pound pavement door to door and go to all these children's boutiques and try to sell your stuff there? And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense because I can be limitless online and sell the entire world while I sleep through digital marketing versus traditional marketing, which would have been door to door, pounding the pavement or newspapers or radio ads. I mean, who listens to the radio anymore? Do you listen to the radio, Joe, anymore?
Is it still around?
I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you, you know? So these are the ways in which the world is changing very quickly. And so we need to keep up with it. So for me, it was a huge eye-opener 17 years ago to know that this digital marketing thing, it's like a real thing. And to be able to turn on and off my business based on sending an email or not, or having inventory or not, or doing anything digitally online was huge. So digital marketing for anyone who really wants to expand outside the scope of just their basic area. And even if you are a local brick and mortar business, you can really win with digital marketing when it comes to Google reviews, when it comes to SEO. There's so many options because everyone is digital these days. And so your money's going to go so much further than, let's say, a traditional infomercial or a traditional radio ad or magazine ad. That's another one where how can someone these days, when we're all using our phones and we have a magazine ad, but how do they get to your website? Like that's how everyone's shopping. They're getting to your website. So how do you get a magazine ad to translate to someone's phone? It's very difficult these days. So your money can go further than it ever could before when it comes to digital marketing. And that's why I'm just such a huge fan of it, because the small guy, he can play against the big guys when it comes to Facebook ads, right? You can be right next to a Coca-Cola ad and be just a small local business. And that is the beauty of digital marketing. It has never been easier to get your message out and to reach your potential audience for a very affordable price.
It levels the playing field, doesn't it?
Absolutely, which I love. And I'm a huge fan of grassroots marketing. Even though we're an ad agency, I'm a huge fan of grassrooting as much as possible and being as lean as possible.
Is there a business that should only do, I'll say, traditional marketing versus digital? Is there ever a case where a business should not do digital marketing?
I can't think of one. I'm really I'm thinking about it and I'm like, no, because even if I'm thinking about, let's just say a tourist business, that's a good one where you're like, but wouldn't the traditional marketing of having the pamphlets at the airport work really well for them, or the magazine ads on the airplane, right? And yes, it doesn't mean that you need to exclude that. However, honestly, the way people are searching is the way you have to think about your business. When someone's looking for your company, where is the first place they're going to go to look for it? Usually for local businesses, it is a Google search. That's just how it is. And it doesn't mean you have to pay for ads, but you really want your SEO to be very strong, right? So there, for me, isn't a situation where someone shouldn't have an online presence in some way. And that does not always mean paying for ads. It means making sure that you can convert online. You can be found online. When was the last time, be honest, even if you remember, Joe, when was the last time you used Yellow Pages? Like a traditional Yellow Pages?
I can't remember the last time I've seen a Yellow Pages book.
Right? Exactly. So times have changed. And I remember listening to this lady who was a marketing coach for realtors. I wish I could remember her name, but she was so smart in her comment. And she said, I don't waste my time with open houses anymore. She's like, that is so outdated. We used to do that before Zillow existed or realtor.com. And she said, the reality is your home buyers are finding their home before you do as a realtor, because they're all searching online. So she's like, why would I waste my time with outdated marketing strategies when the data shows it's like less than 1% of buyers are actually buying a home these days from an open house? It could have been that way a long time ago. But if you want to compete in this market, it's digital. That's just what it is. That's the reality of it. And it doesn't mean it can't be beautifully weaved into traditional marketing, like postcards or these other things that make a lot of sense for your business. And you should be spread out in many different ways. But digital marketing will pay you in ways that many other marketing strategies can't. But again, it's unique to every business. So you have to evaluate your business and what works best for it.
Takara, I work with a lot of small, medium businesses. I am in the tech field, but I work with a lot of SMBs. And what's the difference between marketing and sales?
Oh, it's a huge difference. You know what? I love that you asked this, because a while back, we've always had a very hard time hiring a team because we believe in a standard of excellence that is very hard to find in a potential employee. And so we hired someone to place them, right? So someone to interview these people and place them. And she kept giving us salespeople. And we kept saying, we don't need a salesperson. We need marketers. There's a huge difference between the two. Marketers have a skill set. They have an actual skill set like a pilot. You wouldn't go into a 747 jet and be like, I can fly this, looking at all the tools on, you know, that the pilot's looking at. So you need to actually know how to read data. You need to know how to chart things. You need to know the ins and outs of analytics and how these platforms work when it comes to marketing. Sales is actually, once your marketing team gets the potential client over to you, or the potential customer, closing that deal, right? Mm. So I always think of sales as like the high ticket closers, right? Like these guys who are really good at getting on the phone and getting people in. And it's a different skill set. It absolutely is. Someone who can run ads or who can put together a beautiful magazine ad or does branding, these are marketing things, right? But to sell someone, that's different language. Now, a really good marketer, which it usually doesn't exist, would be really great at copy that sells, right? But these are all different skill sets. So it's really interesting to me. I do find that a lot of small business owners, and it's not their fault in any way, they don't understand the difference. So even I can give you an example, even my mom, or she has a social media person who helps with their social media for the business. And she had mentioned, well, I want her to do SEO. And I want her to do this and I want her to do that. I'm like, but that's such a different skill set. Like you can't get upset if this person doesn't know how to do that. It literally has a different job title to it for a reason. So someone who knows sales may not be the same person who knows marketing and vice versa. And that's okay. That is okay. But you know, the beauty and the superpower is if you can blend the two, be a marketer, know how to run these platforms, understand how copy works, sales copy works, how to convert someone, what needs to happen, then you really have the best of both worlds. But to find that unicorn is very rare.
Very rare. And in my field, when I have a lot of these entrepreneurs, the CEOs that are technology led, so they don't know the difference between sales and marketing, Takara, and it's very tough. And what ends up happening is that they'll get one person hoping to do both. They figure they can't do both. They get another person. And then since they don't know the difference, the lines are blurred. And then there's a little bit of friction between sales and marketing. Oh, they're getting me terrible leads. Oh, they're not telling me what kind of leads they want. And so, you know, you have to bring all these camps together. Yeah. Tough job.
It is such a tough job. And I've heard plenty of leaders in the business space say, honestly, the most important skill is the sales skill. You can be incredibly talented at what you do, but if you can't close a deal, then even if you're better than the next lawyer, let's say, if you are a lawyer and you have a practice and you don't have strong sales skills and you can't close that deal, it doesn't matter if you're a better lawyer, like you need to know how to sell. So even us as a marketing agency, we see the value in hiring a closer, a sales closer, because that's not our strong suit. We're good at marketing. We're good at bringing leads in. We're great at copy. But to close a high ticket sale, that's not what we do. That's a different agency. And so we would pay even for a high ticket closer. Different skill set.
The firm ever hired you to do that? They want both ends.
Yeah, it's very rare that we don't have any clients that would ever put us on to close a sale. Ever.
I see.
We get them the leads, we do the copy, we do the conversion, we do the emails, like we do everything from a sales psychology standpoint. But when it comes to, we always say it's like the football handoff. We'll throw you the ball and you got to catch it and run with it. So a lot of the times that happens when we are doing lead gen, even in SEO, for example. So for example, if we were had a high ticket client and we were getting them potential like network partners or opportunities like press opportunities, we can hand off that lead to them. But we need to make sure their sales team is very strong in closing that lead. That is out of our hands at that point. So it's a slightly different thing. When it comes to e-commerce, of course, there's so much we do to improve sales for our clients, a little bit different strategy, which is more marketing based versus sales based. Yeah.
That's a very interesting point, Carl, because that's more transactional, right? Exactly. There's not a lot of deep relationships. So it's a SaaS acquisition, so it's transactional perhaps, whereas some of these higher ticket, they actually want to shake the hand of someone, or they actually want to go to dinner or golf or basketball game, whatever it may be.
Absolutely. I mean, that is sales psychology 101. Just like any, the higher the ticket price, the deeper trust you need to have in someone. Right. How do we build trust? We build personal relationships, right? So it definitely is a completely different thing. And if I was spending five figures or six figures on something, very likely they have someone on that team that's trying to sell me something that is trying to win me over in every way and build a very close relationship with me, which is how it should be. It's the guy in the bar walking up to the girl, you know, theme there where, you know, you just don't ask her to marry you right when you meet her. There are certain sequences to getting to the level of trust with someone so that you can make an ask like that. And for them, it doesn't feel like an ask. It feels like something they want. So there's a lot of strategies to it. And by the way, I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Voss.
Very much so. Negotiator.
Yeah, so good. Like he has so many strategies. Yes. Gosh, he's brilliant. So if I had someone who was on my sales team or negotiating or high ticket sales, I definitely would want someone who is using a lot of those strategies, which is what's needed to close those types of deals.
One of your posts on Instagram, you said people either buy for two reasons, pleasure or pain.
Absolutely. There's no other reason. I challenge anyone listening to this today to give me a reason that they think someone isn't buying out of pleasure or pain. It always boils down to that. You can also say transformation, but transformation is just your desire to go from pain to pleasure. So anything. You can give me, Joe, give me anything someone would buy. Anything. And I'll talk
about
it. To pain. Let's play. Let's play pain or pleasure.
Okay. A car.
A car, right? So there could be many reasons why. So someone
could be either or.
It could be either or, right? Pleasure could be, when I think of pleasure, I think of Miami. I think of all the Lamborghinis. I think of all the single men that want to just look, you know, really like hot shots in these beautiful cars. It's pleasure. It's ego driven. It's making them feel a certain way, right? If it were pain, it could be, which is very rare with a car, to be honest, but if it's pain, it could be someone who's literally bicycling to work every day and really needs a solution for transportation. But very rarely, car purchases would be something that is pleasure. And anything that you could suggest, whether it was clothes or whether it's a house, whether it is a necessity like coaching or medical, you know, healthcare, like you can always get down to pain or pleasure. That's it. So those are the emotional points that we want to think about when we're thinking of selling something is really there's, I believe it's called almost like the emotion wheel. I forget the name of it, but there's three levels deep of people's emotions. And the surface level might say one thing, but really the root of what's causing it. If we were to talk about pleasure for the car, the Lamborghini, it could also be pain. It could be maybe this person was teased when they were young. Maybe they grew up very poor and now they have a need for the society to see them. So when you're speaking, when you're using sales psychology in your favor, you always have to come down to the emotion of it and what might be really going on in someone's head so that they can feel like they made that decision for themselves. Because really they're just seeking to go from pain to pleasure in many of these decisions.
Bubblegum,
pleasure, of course. Taste, yummy, right? Any type of food would be pleasure. Unless, let's say, you are doing, well, a diet. Let's say you're doing a diet or you're on this huge weight, like fitness goal for the year. And you decide that you are going to go in all in on a protein powder that really, you're not really into, but it's going to be your meals for the next 30 days. Then that for me would be something where it's coming from pain. I'm sick of feeling this way. I want to be healthier. And transformation. I always say transformation. You have a desire to transform. You want to go from pain to pleasure, from feeling bad about whatever that is, your health or whatever it is, to a pleasurable state. So there's, again, driving force can be on both sides of everything. So when we think about it, it's like, where is it coming from? And we can even say it's coming from pleasure, like we did with the car, but honestly, it could be a deep-rooted pain, like a childhood wound that's driving that decision.
It's fascinating to me when I see these marketing studies, Takara, and how it just seems to me marketing is so much science, a lot of art, whereas sales is a bit more relationship. But this one study that it still fascinates me, and tell me if you heard this before, there's a term for it. So they put a Coca-Cola machine in a popular place on a campus, a school campus, and it would earn about $100 a day. Then they put a Pepsi machine next to it. So now there's a Coke and a Pepsi, and both machines started earning $200 a day. So the first question was, are you going to have a soda when it was only one machine? When there's two, the question became, are you having a Coke or a Pepsi? So now it's a completely different decision and you already made it and it's going to be a choice. These kind of marketing things that we're being constantly monitored and marketing to fascinate me.
Oh my gosh, me too. I am actually so into sales psychology. Have you heard of Robert Cialdini's Influence the Psychology of Sales, one of the best books, hands down. And he talks about all sorts of studies. And he also was a college professor and did a lot of research on this, all sorts of studies that have been done on how to get someone to buy. And the 6 or 7, and I'm forgetting, so I feel bad even talking about it because I read it many years ago, but what the driving forces are behind people's purchases and what these scientists would do that would end up exactly like you said, with just the Coke machine, it was $100. But then once they put the Pepsi machine, it was $200 each. And this is also why even in our own lives, we can see it. So if you think of strip malls and that you go to, and you would think to yourself, I've even been asked by my own children, why would you want to put a restaurant or a fast food place next to another fast food place? Because it's right next to your competition. It's the same sales psychology.
Exactly.
It's that same thing. It's like, this is a place to go to eat. And yeah, each one actually helps the other. So sales psychology to me is the most fascinating thing to figure out how people's brains work. And you can actually use that to your favor to drive sales. Absolutely. And anyone who hasn't read at least Chris Voss's book and Robert Cialdini's book, I highly recommend those two books. They are incredible in learning how the human mind works.
Talk to me, Takara, about personal brand in the digital space. I mean, everybody, you know, you ask kids, young adults in the United States, what's the number one thing you want to be? They all want to be influencers. It's a little scary.
It is a little scary. And that's why both my kids don't have social media. and they're teenagers. You know, when I first started my agency, I really looked up to other marketers. I didn't look up to other agencies. I actually learned from other marketers. How did I learn? I was listening to their podcasts. So just like you, and you have wisdom to share, I was learning all about Facebook ads. That was Rick Mulready. That was the one I would just listen to all the time, or certain influencers in the podcast space. And so when I started the agency, my sisters told me, you really shouldn't be on there. Like, you shouldn't be on your Instagram. It should be about the agency. It should be very cold, very boring, very bad, you know? And I was like, no, because why? The purpose of Instagram is to connect with people who either entertain you or share your same values, or you catch up with your friends or family, or you want to learn something, whatever that might be. And why would I want to be a faceless brand when I feel like I have so much to say? And if people want to work with my agency, again, a high ticket agency, and when you think about some high ticket influencers, right, who have businesses that are very high ticket businesses, there's always a person behind it and they're always on camera. And so I'm actually a huge fan of having a face to your brand. I'm a huge fan of it. It just depends on the type of brand. But in my industry, in marketing, which I think is snake oil anyway, but in my industry, I think having a strong leader that can guide you, that can be an expert in the space. So this goes to anyone listening, for you to be on camera and to be perceived as an expert in the space, even if you feel like you're not there yet. My first YouTube videos, I was learning the day before what I would teach. I was like, cool. This is a great thing. Sometimes they say the greatest leaders are the ones who are like learning it at the same time, right? The greatest teachers. And so you just have to get comfortable with being on camera. So I'm actually a huge fan of that. When it comes to actual quote unquote influencers, we've actually worked for a lot of them, to be honest. These are people with 500,000 followers or more. And it's fascinating because it doesn't matter how many followers you have, it doesn't mean you're sellable in any way. So if someone were to want to be an influencer, I, as a marketer, would want to guide them with a strategy that can build the roadmap to ultimately monetizing their platform. Because I can't tell you how many influencers have hundreds of thousands of followers that absolutely cannot sell anything. And the same is true for others who have a lot of followers and are just, it's insane what they're able to do. True influence absolutely sells. I've seen it many times, but you have to do it the right way. And I think having some guidance early on about that would be actually quite helpful if you're able to invest in some guidance about what strategy you should use once you start getting some momentum. I think it would be pretty smart for someone to do that.
Why do you say a lot of snake oil in your industry?
Oh, I'm so forthcoming with it. I say in many of my videos, I am in the industry of snake oil and smoke and mirrors and empty promises. And I hope no one takes offense to this, but bro marketers. Most of our clients, I would say about 90% of our clients have been burnt by the agency before us, which is very much the truth. And they don't understand that it truly is a skill set. And a lot of these quote unquote kids, it doesn't even have to be kids, it can be full grown adults. They don't understand that true marketing is an absolute skill set. It's very technical and data driven and analytical. And they're being sold courses overnight or being told even on TikToks. I think one of my videos in the past year or two is a girl saying, you can make money from just being an SEO expert. You can charge thousands of dollars. And it's like, that's not fair to the person you're taking advantage of. You can't learn SEO overnight and charge thousands of dollars. Like, this is why my industry gets such a bad rep, because people they want to take shortcuts and they want to charge a lot of money instead of being humble and saying, hey, I have a lot to learn and I really want to learn. I want to work at an agency. I want to have an internship. I want to learn the right way. I'm going to dive deep into it. Money isn't my driving factor. Passion is. Like, to get to where you need to go to build up that skill set, it's okay if you're first starting out to not charge a lot of money and be humble and just say, hey, I want to do this in exchange for a review and those types of things. So I think, unfortunately, because business owners, they don't know, it's not their job to know what marketing really entails. They see smoke and mirrors. They see a really good ad by an agency. I promise I've seen so many of these and a lot of big agencies. And trust me, we get their clients and we outperform the other agency by a long shot. So it's sad. And I don't want to always blame the agencies, because some of these agencies are so big. They've grown so big that they don't have the infrastructure to to oversee what their marketers are doing. But then that's not an integrity, is it? When you're charging clients and you can't get them the results that you claim you can do, and you're not giving them the service that you said you were going to give them. So I'm a huge fan. We turn down about 60% of the people who come to us if we believe we can't get them results. I'm a huge fan of grassroots marketing. I'm a huge fan of doing it on your own until you get to a certain level so you can at least learn enough so that you can't get taken advantage of as easily, and to have other agencies audit your agency's work here and there to just make sure what's happening is right. And if your agency is saying, oh, we're doing so well, or we're doing this or doing that, and you're not seeing it, I promise it's probably not happening. So you need someone to deep dive into your analytics. Agencies know how to skew analytics, skew data, make things sound different than they actually are. This is, it's bad. And so I would love to change that about my industry. I'm always very forward about it. I just don't think it's okay to take advantage of people. That's it. So
you have a great post about putting some prospects in the friend zone.
How to say no? Well, I'm sure, Joe, it's probably happened to you. Have you ever had the friend zone?
Of course.
How did you know about it? How did you friend zone a business potential partnership?
Well, I ended up, you know, giving my competitors something that they could take. You know, you just tell them the truth. It's just not a fit.
Yeah, exactly. I think the best way to handle something like that, because it does happen to all of us, is honestly first have humility, like be humble. It takes a lot of courage for someone to ask for your time or a partnership. And so it's always important to realize you were once there. None of us were an expert at the beginning or were successful at the very beginning. We all had to work there. So it's really important to acknowledge that they've come to you, that they've asked for this opportunity, and thank them. And then just be honest. Look, this is, my schedule is busy. This really isn't an alignment. My focus is here. And if you are able to, let's say it's someone who, I don't know, wants to do a podcast with you, or some, you can always, if you know someone else that really wants to interview for a podcast, you can refer them to that person, right? Or if you don't have time. So if you're able to give them a solution and it's going to take you 1 minute to give it, just give it, you know, and be gracious and honest. That's the best way to go about it, because you never want someone to feel bad. Like, you never want to dim that light in someone when they're just trying to get their business up and running. And we were all once there, right? So just handle it with grace and honesty. And it's the best way to navigate that. Saying no can be very powerful, but you can say it in a graceful way, right?
You sure can. And just don't burn any bridges. It's not worth it. You know, what are some good questions businesses should ask to qualify a digital agency?
Oh, I have a list of them, a plethora of them, but some of the basics would be, who's going to be running my accounts, and will I have face-to-face interactions with them? That's a big one. Do we have like biweekly meetings? Where are they located? What other accounts have they run? What are their ad spends? I'm just talking about AdSense, but you could say, how many other email marketing accounts have they done? What are that person's direct results? Show me that person's direct results. What's your reporting like? What software tools are you investing in? So by the way, software is expensive. Software is outside of labor. Softwares are probably our biggest expense as a digital marketing agency. Why? Because it gets our clients better results, hands down. So if someone's charging you a price that's too good to be true, very likely they can't get the kinds of results that an agency like mine can get, because we are investing in that's another question. Do you invest in ongoing training? Are you paying your, a lot of them have employees that they might not be paying very fairly. You know, you want to make sure, like, are you supporting a good business? And also I would ask if there are a couple current clients that I could just talk to. That's a big one. Like, if the agency is doing well, then they should be able to refer you to a couple of their clients that they're currently working with that you could just get on a call with, right? From there, I would ask them about, if you want to get a little more technical, like their attribution windows. That's a big one, where agencies tend to bend reality and they like to position themselves as doing much better than they actually are by skewing that. And the other thing is, if you're doing Google ads, I definitely would ask them how much they're spending on branding campaigns. And I would ask them to remove branding campaigns from results because you want to see results without those. That's a big deal. That's another way to skew results. So there's a lot of different questions. I would also ask for in your industry or niche, those examples, like who have you worked with in my industry and niche? So lots of different questions, but it's really important ultimately to know like who's working on your account. If you're going to have face-to-face meeting, what is the scope of work? Clearly lay it out in the contract. Definitely get it clearly laid out, because if you don't get it laid out, I promise it won't be delivered. And try to get as small of a contract as you can. Meaning if you can, we only work on 6-month contracts now. Some agencies will try to get you to sign a year contract. If you can get like 3 months or 6 months, I would definitely do that. So you have an out. Oh, and make sure also ask them about ownership of assets. So do you get to keep these assets, you know, after you work with them, or will they be taking them away from you? You know, those types of things are really important to know.
Are there industries that are more difficult to market to help clients with? Are there some you just won't do?
Yeah, we mainly focus on e-commerce just because it's my passion and I see it as limitless. And there's just so much potential with that as opposed to a local brick and mortar business. We don't do any local brick and mortar because, yeah, it's a little bit harder. I would say that kind of client is a little bit harder. It's not their fault. It's just they have smaller budgets. They usually, and so therefore their websites aren't set up to convert. They may not understand the ins and outs of marketing. Again, it's just a smaller business, different, just totally different business setup, and it's not their fault. And so it's hard. I always say it's like putting a Ferrari engine in like a VW bug for us. It's that kind of client wouldn't be a good fit for us, but there's plenty of other agencies they'd be a great fit for. And so that kind of client would be hard. The other kind of clients that I find to be very challenging, which we don't like to take on and we refer out, are anyone who's coaching, any type of like coaching that type of thing. It for us would be very challenging. Authors, that would be another one. Anyone with a low ticket price point, I would actually tell them don't invest in marketing right now, that you can't get a return. So I would say the opposite answer to your question is what would be the most ideal client? Would be someone at least minimum $100 average order value, whatever that looks like, recurring business. So it's not always a new business. So for example, a florist or a wedding event planner would not be an ideal client for us because it's a one-off client, right? So that every single time you have to find a new customer, that is challenging. So repeat customers, expandability, a lot of inventory, a lot of things that they can sell, you know, money to invest in marketing. So they understand how marketing works. They know their margins. They know, you know, that's the most ideal and easiest client to work for. So the higher the average order value, the easier it is. And if they don't have a really good average order value, we either won't take them or we're going to work really hard with them to continue on strategies to build that up for them. So yeah, it's, and we're so specific in what we do. There's other agencies that do other type of marketing. And I would, if I was very specific, like a lawyer or you know, doctor, and like, I would want to find an agency that really specializes in those types of areas.
You're a big advocate, Takara, of email marketing. Get a lot of bang for your buck.
I am a huge advocate of email marketing. It is so important. It is the one platform that you really do own. Facebook could be gone tomorrow, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. You know, Etsy, Amazon, right, can change all of its policies. But emails, you own those. And phone numbers, you own those. So it will never go out of style. It just will never go out of style. So having that, you know, the average return, it over any industry is 42x. For every dollar you put in, you get $42 back. Of course, if you have an ad agency running it, that might cut into some of that margin. But if you're doing it yourself, you're going to get back $42. I always say, wouldn't it be nice if I bought $1 million home today and literally tomorrow could sell it for $42 million? Like, that's what it is. But it doesn't take ads, you know, to run unless you're focused on lead gen, which I think is important to build your email list up. And then it's highly automated, meaning if you invest a lot of time in what we call flows, other companies may call it sequences, but automated flows like a welcome series or abandoned cart series or a post-purchase thank you or whatever that might look like, those run on automation. That comes back to where I learned how to make money while I slept. That's how I made money while I slept, a lot of email marketing. And so it's such a huge return. And I personally love Klaviyo. We use it. It's supposed to be an e-commerce platform only, but to be honest, I use it for my service-based business as well because it's just so powerful. So I would recommend anyone, no matter what business you have, learn about email marketing. Do not be scared to send an email. I tell some of my clients who are kind of scared, especially small businesses are scared to send emails. They think people will unsubscribe. I'm telling you, we have clients with hundreds of thousands of subscribers on their lists. Don't worry about it. Like, and they're sending 15 emails a month or more. It's not going to happen. Just constantly send emails. And those who are scared, especially let's say restaurants, that's another one. Restaurants, I'm scared. I don't want to bother them. Every single email, I'm like, just look at it like your Fitbit. Like, remember when Fitbit was a thing?
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd be like, I need to get to my 10,000 steps. Okay, you need to get to your $10,000 this month, right? Like, what are you going to do? You're $1,000 short. Send the email. Send the email. And I promise it works every single time. Sure enough, like the restaurant sent the email, got the $2,000 they needed. And I was like, see, it works. Like it's crazy, but there's a whole, I actually have a free email marketing course. There's definitely a lot of strategy involved with it. And so I provide like 29 tips that can help with that. But I'm a huge fan of email marketing. And as long as you make it entertaining and fun and an email someone can look forward to, it's people aren't going to unsubscribe. And if they do, cool, they're not your person.
I think SMS will be big.
SMS will be big. I see it could be regulated a little heavier in that it's such an intimate way to reach someone, you know? And so I believe, and I don't know about you, Joe, are you subscribed to any SMSs? Like
a few. Yeah.
A few. Is it brands that you really like you haven't unsubscribed yet because you're like, I don't know if I like this text at 6 a.m., but I do like this brand. Like, what if they have a sale that I really want?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is for me. So I think it's a really delicate balance. I'm a huge fan of the marketing for Fashion Nova. Whether you love or hate Fashion Nova, which is fast fashion, their marketing is genius. Everything from their website CRO to their email marketing to their SMS messages. And it's just the funniest SMSs. Like, they're just really good and they drive so much business. So when I think of putting another marketing arm out there, and you absolutely should be doing SMS, I think of how do I make this a value add for our subscribers or for our customers so it doesn't feel icky? How do I make sure they're not getting a text at 6 a.m.? Probably not wanting that, or they're getting annoyed by texts. What can I do to make this be that they don't want to unsubscribe, that this is a fun SMS? And we've done a lot of cool things in that area to make it so it's entertaining, you know? So I think as long as you don't abuse it and you use it with caution, it actually can do very well. And we have clients who are cautious in sending SMSs, but they will make $17,000 from one SMS. And we're like, you need to send more of these. It's okay. You don't have to just send two a month with a subscriber list of like over 100,000, you know, subscribers. We're like, it's okay. Send more. You make so much money. It's fine. So I'm a huge fan of building up the SMS as well, but it may get regulated in the future.
And just like email, you have to make it fun. You can't pitch, right? One, you know, everybody loves to buy, nobody likes to be sold to, right? So you got to actually provide something that'll be a benefit to them and try to seem genuine and make it fun. One of your posts, you have losses that seem, you know, that are terrible, but actually can be blessings in disguise. And your first one is losing a key customer.
Mm-hmm. I've had it happen.
Me too.
That happened. Yeah, right? And we all have. Like, did that become a blessing in disguise for you when you look back? I mean, it might not have, but it doesn't always work that way. But for me, I was so nervous about losing certain clients, especially when I was first starting out and I was kind of unsure of myself and the value I brought. And I'm very confident in the value I bring to all of our clients. I'm so confident. There's not much in my life I'm very confident on, but my skills as a marketer and to grow a business, I never doubt it. So when I first started and I lost a client, what happened next was a bigger client walked in the door. Mm. And honestly, every time that happens, it seems like a bigger client walks in. So for me, it's like losing that energy, that scarcity mindset or that small business mindset that was actually taking me away from being able to work with bigger clients ended up being such a blessing, like releasing it. And you can even take this to your personal life. If you, in a relationship, you lose a relationship and it's hard and it's sad, but it opens you up to a bigger possibility, right? And we learn a lot of lessons from that. And then we learn what we're willing to settle for and what we're not in business or in personal life, right? And so we get stronger boundaries. We get more specific on what we want and what we're inviting in. And then we open up the space for something better to walk through that door. So for me, it has always worked that way. It has never not worked that way for me. So I just have to kind of trust in that when we lose a client, if it's not in alignment. It's pretty rare, but if it's not in alignment, then they're not for us, and we wouldn't want to hold them to that. We would want the client that's super excited to work with us. So we'll invite bigger and better things in.
Hiring mistakes. Are you an advocate of, you know, hiring slow, firing fast?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think we've hired with hiring, I would say, I would imagine any small business owner feels like it's probably the most difficult part of a business. It's employees. I say that with love, but it's not easy. It's really not easy, especially when you have a highly specialized skill set you're looking for, which we are. It can be more challenging, and we've gone through so many strategies to try and hire the correct way. We've done personality tests. We've done tests on skill sets. We've done multiple layers of interviews. We've done background checks. We've done like all of it. And it's a little challenging. I'm a huge fan of hiring slow and firing very fast. And actually, what we've learned to do over the years from all the people, and this is why I say my industry is snake oil, because there's so many people who claim they can do something that they just can't, and it blows my mind. But we now do something where we have like a 3-month kind of period where we can work with them as not an employee, but a contractor, so that we can see if they're a good fit for us or not. And you learn a lot about someone over the first 3 months. And we have an opportunity even in that, should they not be following the scope of the work, that we can pull out. So that's how we go about it now. And I think it's, for us, that's actually how my first big job, I worked for a biotech company, and they would never hire someone directly to their company. It was a very big biotech company. Like, they have their own stock on the stock market, right? They would never hire someone directly. It was the dream job in my hometown to work for them. And you would actually have to go through a third-party agency, prove yourself to them for an entire year before they offered you employment. They had great benefits. It was like one of the top places to work. But it was that same way of like, hey, we're not going to give you access to this great company until you prove that you can be a part of it. I'm actually a huge fan of that, you know, so that's what we do in our business. And anyone, I think, who has like a very highly specialized, it, again, every state's different. There's laws about this. Okay. So, you know, don't take my word for it, look into it. But if you're able to work with someone and get them through your trainings, which is important. So we take ownership that we need to train well, but give yourself an out. Don't maybe give them the keys to the kingdom until you've kind of seen if they're worthy of it, for lack of a better word.
Especially when you have clients that are customer facing. My goodness, you've got to put so much trust in them, right? Because now they're the face of the company, and you've got to be a lot of trust there and empowerment.
Oh yeah. And it makes our clients very uneasy to see their team change out. We've learned over the years, which also, they don't understand that digital marketing really is a very fluid industry. It's very common for someone who's working for an agency to switch out, almost like chefs. It's very common for chefs to go from hotel to hotel just to kind of build up their career, to build up their resume. They usually sign on for 1 or 2 year contracts and then move on to the next highest bidder, right? To move up the career ladder. It's actually very similar in digital marketing. It's people are getting their skill set for a year or two and then moving on. But our clients don't want to hear that. They don't want to know the person who's gotten them 300,000 organic clicks over the last 3 months is leaving their account for some other SEO specialist that they don't know or trust. That's scary. And so we've had even clients, you know, tell us that that's kind of scary. And so the best way that we found to go about it is to try to keep that person that we just are testing out to make sure they're a good fit behind the scenes, to work on the account, to learn before we ever present them to a client, because our clients want stability. And if you're in that type of, in my industry, it's a great way to do that, is to keep someone away. And sometimes it can be hard because you're desperate for a client facing account manager or digital, you know, marketing director, and you don't have anyone, and that can be challenging. So I understand it, the challenges that come with that, very, very well. But if you can avoid that person seeing your clients and just work behind the scenes and really get highly trained and really feel good about them before you present them, it's the best strategy.
And there are some employees that just want to be in the back office, right? I have somebody who's been with me for over 20 years, and she does not want to be in front. You know, she's very good at structure and steps and, SOPs, but she just, so it depends on the mix of the group. So when I started my business in the 90s, I was working way too hard and not paying attention to myself. And, the story. And before you know it, eating pizza and drinking soda late at night, 16-hour days, and terrible Takara. And so I found myself 340 pounds. So the doctor said to me, if you don't lose the weight, you're not going to see your daughter graduate. She was just born. And so I took the next 6 or 7 months. I lost about 130 pounds, and people always ask me how. And losing weight is a very tough thing for people. It's very tough, but it's not a goal. You've got to keep it off. We see so many times this yo-yo kind of on and off, but people wanted the magic bullet, just like in marketing. Give me one tip that I can just change. There's no one tip. There's no what I say is just discipline, right? That's all it took. Focus. My daughter was born now. I'm not only selfishly thinking of myself, I now have this beautiful family. I wonder, Takara, how discipline plays a role in your life.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And one of my favorite books is Atomic Habits. I'm sure you've
Of course.
Right. And it does focus a lot on, honestly, discipline. Like, you can have goals and dreams, but if you don't have discipline, they're just daydreams, right? And I always say nothing worth having is easy. So You can't have, and you know very well, you can't have a six pack without going to the gym. You can't have a successful relationship business without putting time and effort into it. So everything in our life that we want actually takes a lot of discipline. And so that comes down to, and even I could be so much better. I could be so much better in this area. So things like time management is huge. Things like putting your phone away. Actually, it was an example in Atomic Habits. He said, do what you need to do first, and then the reward would be getting some time on your phone, right? Actually, I have a podcast about Atomic Habits and all of his tips. But the point is like having the discipline to physically put it into a different room, right? Having the discipline to wake up early in the morning, if you need to go and work out and get that done, right? Things, the difference between you and someone more successful or getting to where you want to go, it might not actually even be skill set. It could be things like they're disciplined. They're willing to give up what you're not willing to give up. And so it comes down to committing yourself to whatever you need to do. And sometimes that's sacrifice, but to what cost, right? Like, so what you said is, it's like I was working a lot and I was eating a lot and all of those things. So self-care needs to be part of your discipline. In my opinion, I need to be disciplined to put away work so that I can be with my children, or so that I can take time for the gym, or so that I can travel. There's discipline in that as well, because it can backfire when you're overworking and you're just hurting yourself more than you're helping, right? So discipline is in every area of your life. And that's why I find so many similarities between fitness and successful business owners. And I tend to talk about it a lot, because that's why I have so much respect for people in the fitness industry, or who are very disciplined and go to the gym every day and commit to their health and eat healthy, because the same discipline that goes into your health and your fitness is the same discipline that's going to trickle down to every other area of your life. So if you find someone, you meet someone, and they're disciplined in that way, you can expect that they're going to be disciplined in all these other areas of their life. And what does that speak to about them? You know? So I find discipline to be very sexy. It's a great trait for someone to have, and it carries over in so many different aspects of your life. And it does take a lot of self-sacrifice and a lot of digging deep to how important your goals and your dreams really are, because discipline is different than drive. You could have the drive or determination to lose weight or get fit, but if you don't have the discipline to get out of bed at 5 a.m. every morning to do it before you have to take the kids to school, it's not going to happen. So it's not easy. It's not easy. I'm sure you would agree.
Not easy at all. And you talked about restraint. You talked about, control, routine. These are all kind of my ongoing thesis is that, discipline is a spectrum, and, with about 10 elements. And, there's no wrong answer, right, Takara? So some people have a very militant response to it. It means this and this. And some people say, well, self-control. That means I'm not going to overeat, or I'm not going to overdrink, or I'm not going to abuse anything. And there's no wrong answer. Everybody has their own flavor. And but I do think it's one of the keys to success.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, there's extremes like the David Goggins of the world.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's whatever honestly works for you. But I think you have to be really brutally honest with yourself. Like, are you showing up in the way that you need to show up every day? And sometimes that takes reflection from other people, because sometimes it's hard to see ourselves through our own eyes. And so I always say, when the most difficult decisions, whenever you have to make a difficult decision, the best way to always make the right answer is to close your eyes and envision the person you want to become, or who it is that you look up to for that. So let's say you want to grow your business, right? And you really look up to, Steve Jobs, and what he did with Apple. And you ask yourself, when you have a difficult decision of what to do with your day, or what to invest in, or should I go to this conference? If you ask yourself, what would Steve Jobs do? And whatever that answer is, that's what you do. Like, would Steve Jobs do this? Yes or no? So would Steve Jobs wake up at 5 in the morning and, commit to his business? Would he do this? Would he do that? Whatever that is, if you want to be like a certain athlete that you look up to, does he do this? Does he do that? And that's the reflection for you, because they've paved the path there. And so it's an easy way to get disciplined when you think about those you look up to or want to become like, and ask, what would they do? Are they disciplined in this way? Because they've already paved the path for you. It's all you gotta do is follow it. But it can be challenging.
Certainly can. Takara Krizma, what motivates you?
Well, of course, I know the tempting answer is my children, which it is. They are everything. They are the deepest part of my soul and the strongest motivation. I can't imagine any parent would say otherwise. So outside of that, which would be the normal answer, and that really is my driving force, I would just say that I'm very aware that life is short, and we kind of get one chance at this based on what you believe. And I want to live it to the best of my ability, and I know tomorrow's not guaranteed. And so the driving force is, how can I make sure I get everything done on this beautiful time on this planet that I want to get done before my time is over? And of course, how can I leave that legacy for my children is another big part of it. And so that mostly is what drives me. Money doesn't drive me. I've always said that. Money has never driven me. It's always passion and joy and being in alignment. So when those things are in alignment for me, actually money just flows. And I find that to be true with everything, right? So I always say, when I go on vacation, which I'm going to Australia this week, wild by myself, just because. but it's every time I travel, and I'm in alignment, I'm at peace, I'm in joy, we get a new client It's like wild, or we get like, it's just insane. It's like, whoa. So my driving force is probably just knowing that life is short, you know, like let's do this. Let's have fun while we're here. Let's do it. Let's not bog ourselves down with things that upset us or don't create like a beautiful space for everyone else in this world. And I want to make sure that my children know how much they're loved and really look up to me as a role model. Those are my driving forces.
That's wonderful, Takara. So how do you measure success?
In that my, actually, I, before I answer, because it's a single word, can I ask you how you measure success?
Well, sliding, you know, it depends on when you ask. I mean, if you ask me right now, it would be something very similar. I have two daughters and, you know, don't worry. They look like their mother. I don't know what you mean. But, and they're 20 and 23. And, you know, I want them to be happy and fulfilled.
Absolutely. So it kind of comes down to mine. I always say success for me has nothing to do with money. It has to do with freedom.
Freedom.
And of course, money can make it easier to have that freedom.
Yeah, resources.
Yes, resources, but freedom for myself to make my own choices. So when I quit my 9-to-5 as a single mom with a pretty comfortable income every year, that was scary, but I didn't have freedom. I had to, the reason why I quit was because I had for 8 years dedicated all my Thanksgivings and all my Christmases, and all I wanted was Christmas Eve with my children. It was so important to me. It's a great employer, by the way, but I didn't get it. And that for me was like, done. I made a goal 6 months. I said, for the next 6 months, I'm have a financial goal. Every month it's going to incrementally increase. If I hit it every month over the next 6 months, I'm giving my 2 weeks notice. Sure enough, that was December 25th, July 4th, I gave my 2 weeks notice. Because I didn't have freedom. And I wanted freedom to be able to choose my life and what I wanted to do and work when I wanted to work and be with my kids when I wanted to be with them. And so, yes, money makes it easier. Freedom to travel wherever I wanted to travel and work from anywhere in the world. So for me, it's freedom. And I also tell my children, you can make money at anything. Just don't let money drive your decisions. I just want you to be happy. So for me, you being successful would be what makes you happy, because ultimately that will lead to your freedom. And when you're in alignment, like I said, with your passion and your joy, money will always flow. So that for me is success, would be freedom.
What a wonderful notion, Takara, freedom. And freedom to do what you want, to be able to move around. It's so wonderful. It makes me deeply breathe. That's wonderful. I was so excited when we set this up, Takara. You're fascinating. Your social media is excellent. You have a glow about you. And, you know, one thing about your posts, you're very smart. You're very informed. You're never arrogant, which is nice. I kind of see that in a lot of posts with other people. You're very balanced, that line of confidence and arrogance. It's wonderful. And, you know, you've got a great presence, you've got a great smile, you've got a lot of great content. It's not hollow at all. I really, really enjoy it. I was so happy when we set this up, and this discussion only furthers my admiration. I hope that one day we get to, you know, if I'm ever in the islands, maybe we can have a cup of tea, certainly after your trip from down under.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love that. I invite you to come to Hawaii anytime. And thank you. Those words mean so much to me. Humility and humbleness to me are some very attractive qualities. So I hope I'm always grounded in that way.
Certainly. So anybody listening, how can we get in touch with you?
Thank you for asking. I am Takara Charisma everywhere online, because believe it or not, there's no other Takara Charisma in the world. Funny. And that actually really is my real name, and it's spelled very weird. So I will let you spell it for everyone anywhere online. But you can always connect with me on TikTok or Instagram, Facebook. And I have our agency, which is Charisma Marketing, also spelled very weird. And all free resources at takaracharisma.com for any of your marketing needs. So I'd love to connect with anyone who wants to learn how to grow their business. I'm definitely here to offer a lot of free advice. And if you have anything you want me to cover on social, tell me. I love ideas so I can make videos on them.
Absolutely. And Takara, it's two C's, one R, people. T-A-C-A-R-A, Takara. And yeah, Charisma with a Z, K-A-R-I-Z-M-A. We'll make sure to put it in the show notes.
Thank you. That is very kind of you. Anyone who spells it first on the or spells it right on the first try gets a virtual hug.
Deal. Thank you so much, Takara. You be well.
Thank you. You as well, Joe. It was great speaking to you today.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. It's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pins Discipline Conversations.